It's always a little stressful, isn't it, when you have something that needs to be fixed at home and maybe you don't have the time or maybe you don't have the money to take care of it. But you know what? Sometimes letting it go can end up costing a lot more money in the long run. Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have two pros with us today who know a lot about those kinds of experiences around the home. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Hi, Ken. Great to have you back.
Oh, nice to be here, Larry.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates Fitchburg, and is Ken's partner for these programs. And, John, always a pleasure.
Pleased to be back.
Nice to have you with us. And you guys are both really busy now.
Well, never too busy to be here, Larry. But yeah, we're doing pretty well this season.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I can't imagine that you would have ever had any comments recently having to do with wet basements or anything connected with wet.
Larry, we've seen the worst floods we've ever seen. Oh. We've seen houses that never leaked before that had 2 feet of water in the basement this year.
Oh. The ducks love it.
Yeah,
so it's good for ducks, but not for us.
You know, and John in Milwaukee has a question that may relate to just that. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning.
I guess it's a pretty obvious question. A friend of mine just bought a house. Well, she's been there 2 years now. And she got some water in the basement last year. So she had a new sump pump put in, and she extended her drain pipes and everything, you know, to a good distance. And the Roto-Rooter man came and he took out some roots that were growing in the pipes. So we thought everything was fine. Now, I know we're getting a lot of rain, but even before the rain, when we had a lighter rain and I think the ground was still frozen, she had some water in her basement, not much, but some puddles. But now she's got about 2 inches of water. It's on a hill, you know, so I thought that was going to not be a problem. I was just wondering, I was telling her maybe we need a foundation expert to come in and look at it and see. Maybe this is something we can't avoid. I don't know. I know it all depends on the specific house, but...
Kind of the lay of the land around the building, too. John, comments from you?
Well, John, in Milwaukee, some of the worst flooding we've seen this year, I think Ken will back me up on this, are houses located on hillsides where drainage is going past the houses, and it is running against the foundations, and then it's coming into the basement. Now, you're in Milwaukee. Does your friend have a concrete masonry unit, or also called concrete block or cinder block foundation, or poured concrete?
She's got concrete block.
Concrete block, which is typical for the Milwaukee area. A concrete block is a very heavy version of a sponge. It's highly porous, and of course you know the centers are kept hollow to reduce the weight. So once water hits it, finds any kind of crack, or simply works its way through the block itself, it heads down through those voids down to the bottom and then tends to run out where the block hits the footing and the floor is located. Now, Ken and I had talked a little bit before we're coming in because we usually compare notes and want to have some little theme, and our theme is sort of wet basements. So we'd emailed a little bit, and I'm just going to mention a couple of things which may pertain to your friend but also pertain to other people. But one of the first things you need to look at is the exterior drainage. We had one house where the people had a foot of water in the basement. It had not leaked in 30 years, but the swale next to their house filled with ice this winter because Wisconsin weather has changed. Freeze, thaw, freeze, thaw. So shallow swales no longer work. You really have to look at the drainage around your house, and you have to increase the depth of the drainage to keep that water away from the house.
And that would be like a foundation expert to come in and look at that?
No, it's really the first thing you may wish to start with is the landscaping, because you want swales. So if there's what's called sheet flow or accumulated concentrated sheet flow, you want that to move around the house. Secondly, you want to pitch the grade around the house at about 5%, which means 5 to 6 inches drop in the first 10 feet.
See, what you're doing is you're basically creating a small moat several feet away from your house by having if the area around your house is a little higher than the grade right at the house, you want to have that grade go lower than it is at the house. I don't know if I'm describing this well.
No, that's a moat.
It's kind of like a small moat, right. 10 feet away from the house or thereabouts.
On the sides where the water is. You want your house elevated above the areas where the water is going to flow.
Okay.
That is going to be your first line of defense. Your second line of defense, it sounds like she's already done. She has gutters on her house. The gutters are clean. She's extended the downspouts out 6 to 10 feet.
Like 25 feet, yeah.
Oh, 25 feet. That's
even better.
That's even better. If those things don't work, then unfortunately we're into either basement water collection or basement water proofing. Ken, you've installed a lot of basement water collection. Why don't you just speak about that for a minute?
Well, we were just talking, again, just before the show started about something that that Larry had done in his house. And he had a contractor come out and dig a trench around the inside of his foundation in the floor. I want to say about 16 inches down,
yeah.
All the way around. Put a sump pit in there and then ran a drain tile around to that sump pit and then pumped out from there out away from, quite a distance away from his house. And that's a sort of a standard way of dealing with water that when you have a relatively high water table, which is possible too because you, even though you're on a hill, you could have groundwater, you could have an underground stream running that, at different seasons has enough water to create a problem. So that's one really, really practical next step.
Okay. Now, I mentioned maybe she could have a second sump pump put in. That would be a waste of money.
What does she have now? She's got a sump pump?
Sump pump.
Okay.
I don't know if she has drainage tiles. It's a fairly new house. It's all brick. It's really nice.
So she probably has drain tiles around the outside perimeter, I'll bet you, because that would have been a standard. I just wonder if they ran them inside, too.
And the question, of course, is whether they work.
Yeah, because a lot of times they'll put plastic down and they won't have them in a sock and they'll fill up with silt and they'll be good for one or two seasons.
And sometimes they drain uphill to the sump pump. But if she does have drain tile, John, you can hire sewer companies who come in with these fiber optic things and they can run through these drain tile and see if they're actually operating.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly an option.
That's certainly worth looking at. But certainly that grading, getting the land near the house higher than
right,
so that the water flows away from the house.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right, Larry. And we really are dealing with climate change in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had 11 inches of rain here in Madison so far this year. That is a lot of rain. That's a third of a year's rain to get in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we're going to have to do more to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
We had that front stall over us about 10 years ago. It was a heavier downpour than this. It was like every 10 minutes there was a really heavy downpour. I got about 4 inches of water in my basement, but that's the only time I've had trouble. I got an older house. It's not anywhere near as well-built as hers.
Hmm.
But so it's kind of disappointing. She has this
house,
and she's getting water. I mean, she's on a hill. Of course, she's on a slope, too. She's on a hill, but there's a slope that comes down towards her house.
Right, and that's where you need your swale.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll call them a berm. A berm is usually a higher point away from the house.
You need to get that water away as it comes down the hill away from the house. Good luck, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
I have the feeling we're going to get a few more calls like this because it's been that kind of spring.
Angeline in Hill Point, thank you for calling. Hi.
I have a basement question, but it's not about flooding, I'm happy to say.
Good.
We're insulating our basement right now, and so far, my husband has glued 2-inch board insulation against the concrete wall and built a 2x4 stud wall beyond that, and he's intending to put bat insulation into the stud wall, and it's a kind that has a coating on it. It's for basements. So my question is, do we need to do an additional vapor barrier on top of that bat insulation? And we are also insulating the ceiling, and I'd like to know if we need to do a vapor barrier there also.
Well, that's a good question. The current code disallows a vapor barrier on the interior of a basement wall.
Okay.
The theory is that moisture can come in and out of a basement, and you want to have relatively free movement of moisture so that there's no buildup of molds.
So do you think the insulation that we bought is the right kind to use?
Well, that's a good question. Did you the material that's glued up to the wall, is that a closed cell foam? Is that a polyisocyanurite, or is that a is it white?
It's pink. It's 2 inches thick.
Okay.
It's I can actually get it.
Sounds like EPS.
Yeah, it's an it's a closed cell foam insulation.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a standard way of insulating a basement now, but you don't want to put a vapor barrier inside. Okay. My concern about putting any sort of fiberglass inside of that is that if it does get moist, it'll get wet and you'll lose the value of the insulation.
Right. So are you suggesting that we don't do any more insulation?
You've got 2 inches on the walls?
Yes.
And it's not an exposed basement? How much is sticking out of the ground?
Some of it is exposed. Half of it is exposed. So consider two walls exposed, two walls underground.
Well, I would think that you could actually cut some more of the foam insulation and put it in the wall, maybe another couple inches. That'd be one way of doing it.
Yeah.
But no vapor barrier.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to add, John? Is it?
Well, Angeline mentioned that they were insulating the basement ceiling, and I see that done pretty frequently, and I've never come up with a good reason for doing it.
For sound.
Yeah, sound.
For sound. Yeah. Okay, but why don't you just hang the drywall down on hat channels, because that is going to do much more for sound attenuation than is the insulation. The problem is the sound is transferred through the framing.
Uh-huh.
So you could fill those cavities completely with insulation, and the sound will come right through the floor joists. So if you use what's called a hat channel, you can hang the drywall down on a flexible hanger, and that will do a great deal of sound attenuation and will cost less than the insulation.
How much headroom do you have there?
I think about 7.5 feet.
Yeah, so you should be able to get it. They're usually, what, 3/4 of an inch?
Usually figure an inch total by the time you have the flexible hanger, but that's going to be less expensive and much more effective, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay, so then no vapor barrier on this.
No.
None on the exterior.
No.
Okay. All right, so I think I've got it.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Armando in Galena, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing? Thank you for your program. You always have such an interesting variety of programs. Anyhow, I live in a very old farmhouse, probably from the 1800s, and generally I never had any water problems in the basement, but last year and this year, particularly now, in the north wall, I noticed that there is water coming into the basement quite a bit, like about 1 inch, but I have a drain there and somehow the water went to the drain. But then I went outside to look at the situation. I said, oh no, it's going to be very expensive to do a trench and just waterproof that. And I noticed that the farmer, what he had done a long time ago, you know, before I bought the farmhouse, was to put a very thick plastic against the house, and it's about 2 feet wide. And then he put some bricks on top of that, and I didn't know there was plastic underneath. And then it seemed that he had solved the problem for a while. And maybe now the plastic, deteriorated or something. So can I just replace that plastic and then keep another 20 years without water in my basement?
Well, it'd be so nice if life was that simple. This plastic was laid... This plastic was laid flat on the ground and then covered up with some blocks. Is that what you're saying, Armando?
Yeah, the plastic is under the ground. I didn't see it before because he put bricks, you know, like if it was a brick pathway or something. And then before I thought it was just bricks, but then underneath the bricks there is a thick plastic. It almost looked like one of those mats that people use for the chairs in the offices or something, very thick. Mm-hmm. And about 2 feet wide, and it was from the house to the exterior, and I guess grass was growing on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sending the water from away from the walls. Because I have limestone walls, very old.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And limestone walls are always going to leak if water approaches them. Armando, can you tell whether the water is coming through the walls on the upper part of the walls, or is it coming out in through the lower part of the walls?
I actually went there when it was raining, and it was the basement's about, I would say, 7 feet tall, and about 2 feet up, I saw water really coming out through the wall and then just going down.
2 feet above the floor, it was coming through the wall.
2 feet above the floor.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And
yeah, so pretty low.
In
so
one area,
low.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the problems with walls, and it's easier with things like concrete walls that are more impermeable, is you're trying to figure out whether this is surface water running against the house, following the foundation down and then dripping in, or whether this is due to the soil around the house actually being saturated so that there's actually water pressure, hydrostatic head pressure, pushing the water in. And that's what you may have to determine. And a lot of that determination is made by looking at the neighborhood. Water could be flowing towards your house, seeping into the soil feet away, even 100 or 150 feet away, and still be coming against your foundation. So we really can't tell whether that plastic is doing anything at all. It may be and it may not. When it's that low on the wall, I rather suspect that what you have is saturated soil around that wall, and that it's leaking for that reason. You may have to consult with somebody in your area who knows a bit about the hydrology of the area. Even a landscape architect may be able to look for you, or if you can get a geotechnical engineer to look at it. And they may be able to evaluate how permeable your soil is and what kind of flows there may be underground that are hitting your basement.
There is a hill, you know, the distance of where I live, but I'm sure water is coming from there because I have two ponds and then the springs for the pond, I'm sure they come from the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
for a time they were dry, but now they are just gushing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I
think you've confirmed the hydrostatic head pressure theory, Armando. The nice thing about old sandstone foundations is that they leak.
Yeah.
Well, what happens is the pressure, you know, the soil doesn't become super saturated and really heavy and start pushing the wall in as it often can on like a concrete block foundation. So I have a 160, almost 170-year-old basement, probably very similar to yours, and I know it's leaking today. And to tell you the truth, I don't care. I just let it leak. It runs into the sump pit, and I pump it out. There's nothing I can do about it because I know that it's hydrostatic head pressure. So sometimes the best thing is to simply live with it. Take care of what you can on the exterior, as we were talking about earlier, by having a 5% grade away from the house, put in a berm or a swale to protect yourself against sheet flow. And if you've got a little bit of water coming into the basement when it rains like this, count yourself lucky that it isn't worse and just say, I'm not putting anything on the floor down there.
Yeah, I mean, you might be in a position where the best thing that you could do is guide the water that comes in into a place that you could move it away from the building or move it out somehow. Mm-hmm. That might be the best you can hope for in this situation.
You can certainly put in the type of collection system that we were talking to John in Milwaukee around, where they cut the floor around the wall. The water comes through the wall, goes right through some washed stone, gets pumped outside, and you never even really see the water.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, Armando.
Thank you very much. It is amazing the power of water. Water is good for some things and bad for other things.
Yes.
You got that right. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, Fitchburg, Wisconsin, our guest today as we talk about your home and home repair. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guests Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Thank you for listening in. Thanks to them for being here. Call us at 800-642-1234 with your questions, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Patricia in Madison, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I had vinyl siding applied to my house about five to eight years ago. And I would like to have it power washed this summer. And I've noticed that the siding has little, vent holes underneath some of the sections.
Yes.
And since parts of my house are two-story, I'm concerned with power washing. Since the water would be aiming upwards, should I be concerned about water getting in those little vent holes or into the gable vents?
Well, that's a good question, and the short answer is yes, you should be concerned. But I'm going to say that I have washed siding successfully over the years, but I haven't. I'll ask you a couple questions, and we'll go from there. What's on underneath the siding?
There's Tyvek under there, and then under there is the styrofoam. You know.
Okay. Those little drain holes are made to actually drain moisture from behind the siding out. And you can get, when you have water coming from underneath, you can get quite a bit of water underneath the siding. So you should really be careful. If you're going to do it, I would say the second floor, you'd probably want a professional, someone definitely who's comfortable with a ladder or has special equipment to be able to hit it on the perpendicular rather than up underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And then also keep the pressure low. Start with a lower pressure because you can damage the siding. You could push a lot of water back up behind the siding, and you don't want to do any of that sort of thing. So it can be done. Usually what happens is the best way to do it is to do low pressure, hit it on the horizontal, saturate it with a little water and some mild detergent, brush it, and then rinse it off, and not do too much. If you hit it too hard, you could actually damage the siding too.
Yeah, I was going to hire someone for doing it. I wasn't going to do it myself.
Well, make sure that they know what they're doing, and ask them these questions. You know, about how they're going to approach the second floor, and if they say that we're just going to hit it from the ground, you really don't want to do that.
Okay, and the gable vents also would be something to avoid, wouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Quite often, though, on some homes, the gable vents have no function whatsoever, and they're just there to break up the line. So do you know if yours actually have, if you go up and look in the attic, can you see like daylight through them?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay, so they do function. Yeah, you'll get, if they get sprayed from below, you'll get water in your attic, and it could come in your walls and saturate your insulation and cause all kinds of not very nice problems. So
I don't like hearing all these things.
No, just get somebody who knows what they're doing.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, bye-bye. Patricia. We had a Facebook question from Becca. As a house that was built in 1959, in the master bath, there is a heater in the ceiling instead of a fan. We don't use it. It looks unsafe to me, but would like to check into getting it removed and putting a vent fan in instead. Who do I call for that? An electrician? A contractor? And any idea what a vent fan might cost me?
Oh, yeah. These are good questions. We change them out quite regularly. A lot of these old ones had either like an infrared light, or it could have had a little heating element, and they're very inefficient. They don't really work that well, except for directly below them. So we just remove and replace them. An electrician could probably do it for you. A heating contractor could do it. Some building contractors could do it, but they may check the electrical and have an electrician make sure the wiring is safe, because a lot of these older units were wired improperly, ducted improperly, and don't meet today's code. So there's some things that you might want to do to improve their ventilation. Just a quick example of that is sometimes the old ones vented out into the attic, and that's a real no-no. They have to go outside. They have to vent directly to the outside. A fan... A really nice Panasonic fan, the material will cost you $200 to $300. You can get cheaper fans. I don't usually recommend anything cheap, because they sound like little airplanes taking off when you turn them on. So you want something that's got that's going to move the air, do it quietly, have some energy efficiency. If there's lighting, you can get all kinds of fun little features like night lights, automatic on and off switches, and so forth. So I hope that helps.
And the on-off, with a timer, I think you guys have talked about this in the past, I know, especially in certain times of the year, it's good to let that fan run for maybe 20 minutes, 20 minutes after you're done showering.
That's a great idea. And for people with kids, kids are notorious for not turning the fan on if it's a separate switch, you could actually have, I know Panasonic makes a unit that has an automatic sensor, so it sees you in the room. You can set them to stay on for X period of time after it stops sensing movement in the room. So there's a lot of cool options out there.
Yeah, Judith was telling me they have a timer on, and you don't even have to remember to turn it off that way then, you know?
Yeah, just, turn the dial or push the digital button and forget about it.
Yep.
Forget about it.
Forget about it. Wendy and Racine, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hi. We have a 1947 six-frame Cape Cod story-and-a-half house, and there's been condensation forming in the one-bedroom northeast corner. We cleared it up by, I think, we put a box fan up in the attic just to get some airflow, but we have insulation blown in between the floors. There's also insulation on the ceiling, and I'm just wondering, there's three roof vents. We really can't vent the soffit. There's only 4 inches of soffit on the eaves ends of the house. Do you have any suggestions for controlling that moisture problem?
John Freiberger, what do you got?
Yes, well, Cape Cods are always interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's help at hand. So grab a pencil. There is a wonderful website called coravent.com. It's CORA-A-vent.com. And they actually have drawings, at least the last time I was online, they had drawings on how to insulate and vent a Cape Cod. And they also make materials for historic houses, including Cape Cods, that only have 4-inch soffits so that they can be vented. The condensation is almost certainly a result of a lack of insulation in that corner. So when that corner, let's say it's 0 degrees outside and your humidity inside is 45%. When that corner hits 40 to 45 degrees, you're going to get condensation in that corner. So there is an insulation problem there. It is not just moisture. But you are wise. It sounds like you're headed in the direction of looking at an integrated ventilation and insulation system, and that's what you should do. You may have to hire somebody who can do some thermal imaging, because with thermal imaging, they can really tell you what your heat loss is in different parts of the house. Now, Ken and I know over the years there's been many ways of framing corners, and about half of them preclude putting insulation into them, which is why Joel Stillbrick and other people have come up with new ways of framing corners so that we can actually insulate them. But you often end up with a corner with either voids in it, so you get a lot of heat loss, or corners that are solid wood, so you have a lot of thermal transference. So some of those things we can't tell unless we take things apart. We don't want to do that. So check with energy experts in your area, and somebody that can do some thermal imaging can probably help along. But start with a CoreVent site. See how much you can learn from that. You can even fill out the worksheets, and that'll tell you whether you have enough venting or not.
She could go to the Focus on Energy website, couldn't she, and just get some ideas about who she might speak to about thermal imaging, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. Do they have thermal imaging on Focus on Energy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do
oh,
they?
Yeah. Oh, sure, sure.
Okay.
And the best time for this thermal imaging, does that matter what time of year you do it?
It does, and you have to have somebody who actually knows what they're doing, because even the time of day makes a difference.
Okay.
So make sure you interview the people. And there are several websites that talk about thermal imaging on houses, and there's a couple of websites that talk about how to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, Wendy. And by the way, CoreVent.com, that's up on our Facebook page too, so I think it's right next or near where we have our announcement on today's show. So if you didn't write that down, go to my Facebook page, and there it is. Al in Westby, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I got a question. Some people were talking last evening. It's not on my property, but they've got a septic tank that sits in an area that's got quite a high water table, and the septic's got to be pumped every other day now with all this rain and the frost going out of the ground, snow and ice melt. It's got a long neck on it. Is there a possibility that frost is heaving this thing and crack the tank, and also the tube that goes down into the lid, and to repair it, that's probably best done by the outside?
Hmm.
Septic tanks can get flooded by groundwater when the groundwater actually gets higher than the top of the tank. Generally, when you drop the lid on top of the barrel type, it is not very well sealed, and so you can get a lot of seepage into the tank itself. If it's a mound system on a pump, they have a tendency to flood. They have a tendency to damage the mound. These people may actually be looking at a new septic tank, which would be a sealed system that is going into an elevated mound. So this can be a real problem, and it can lead to not just a failure of the tank, but groundwater pollution in the area as well. If they have 40 acres or more, there may be money available up to 50% through state or county programs to replace a failing septic tank on an area that's zoned agricultural. You'd have to check with the local county environmental office on that. And I believe the last time I looked at the program in Dane County, they actually had to come in and condemn the tank, which they're happy to do for you, and then they will pay for half of the replacement of the tank. So they really need to talk to local septic tank expert and see what the alternatives is. Alternatives are, but it does sound like they've got a serious groundwater problem. As we were talking earlier, we've got to be really ready for climate change and these very, very heavy rainfalls. So different types of sanitary systems may have to be put in. Sounds like what they have right now is a flooding holding tank, because it should, unless they've got a family of 23, they should not be filling that tank every 48 hours. That sounds like that is groundwater coming in because of an elevated water table.
Yeah, it is. There's no mound system. It's an older ingrown tank.
Okay, then they should certainly start doing some investigation as to the availability of any kind of support, because they're looking at from $10,000 to $14,000 for a new system.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. We got a Facebook question from Sarah, who wonders about redoing her driveway, which is flush to the side of her house. She wonders, am I risking introducing water to my currently dry basement by redoing my old asphalt driveway? Would using that permeable, newfangled concrete add any risk? I did not take care of the old asphalt, and it will need to be replaced in the next few years. After the new roof, of course, as she says.
Need new glasses, Larry.
Yeah. Well, I accidentally darkened the screen so I could hardly read it. Now I can read it perfectly. So anyway, that's the question.
Sure. Well, let's see. Let's start with replacing the driveway. If you're going to replace the driveway and you're going to do something like asphalt or concrete, or even if you're going to do the permeable options, you want to make sure that the grade is properly done. It's just like a house with, we were talking earlier in the show, a house with a swale or lacking a swale, a little moat away from the house. If you change the grade so that the driveway in any way is leaning towards the house, you could have a problem. Not necessarily, but you're increasing your likelihood. We have put in several permeable driveways over the last few years, and they've been very successful, but it's there again. You want to make sure the grading is done properly. The substrate has to be right. The preparation has to be correct, and it's a great way to move groundwater away from the house. If you're going to do concrete, no matter what you do, you want to have it's a foam membrane that separates the wall of your foundation from the driveway so that it's not touching the house. What do they call them?
Well, it's a control joint what you're thinking of, Ken.
It's too simple.
So you've got this soft foam that can compress, and the other nice thing about this foam is that it's held down the width of the joint in depth, mm-hmm. and then you can put a urethane sealant in there so that is a completely watertight joint, and the film is your bond break. So that way the sealant will stick to the concrete of the foundation and the concrete or asphalt of the driveway.
But so, it lets the driveway and the wall of the basement move at different rates.
That's
and,
correct.
And be flexible.
Because especially asphalt has a coefficient of thermal expansion, mm-hmm. concrete less so, but both of them, when there's a big difference between 25 below zero and 150 degrees in Wisconsin as far as expansion and contraction of products.
So good luck.
Good luck, yeah. And we have an email from Gail in Oshkosh. She had water coming in around her chimney. She's going to find somebody to repair the flashing around the chimney, which seems to be the problem. What should I do to make sure they fix it properly?
I'm assuming this is a masonry chimney. Yeah. And if you do a masonry chimney, you really want to have a let-in flashing. That is a flashing that is cut into the brick or the stone, not one that is just slammed up against it and caulked into place.
Mm.
And this takes somebody with a little bit of skill. This can be done by a good quality roofer. The other thing that Gail needs to be a little bit careful of is the type of masonry that she has for the chimney and the type of cap. If the cap is undersized and water is getting into the top of the brick, after days and days of rain like this, sometimes it's actually saturated masonry and not flashing that is failing. So you can put in brand new, beautifully done flashing, and the chimney keeps leaking on you. So talk to the roofer and ask them to evaluate the condition of the chimney itself. If there is any kind of issue, you can usually get a free quote from a mason and a free inspection, or you can talk to some of your local chimney sweeps. So you should be able to get two or three professionals who would be willing to look at this for you for free and give you a – you want to look at the entire system, not just the flashing.
There we go. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates Fitchburg, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your house today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. Gary in Spring Grove, Minnesota has a question for you, too, so I want to go there. Hi, Gary. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got some moisture coming in at the base of the basement wall. It's very little moisture, but it's enough that it got the carpet wet and wicked up into and ruined a hutch. It's been there since about January, so I don't think it's from spring thawing. And the house is about 33 years old. We've never had any moisture before. I was surprised earlier that you had mentioned that you do not put vapor barrier in a basement wall like that, and there is the old paper barrier on that wall. So I was wondering what you thought about that.
All right, John?
Okay, well, a couple of issues here. If you said, Gary, that the water is coming in low, and that, if you remember our discussion with Armando, probably means you've got hydrostatic head pressure. So you've got saturated soil around the house, and that makes a certain amount of sense. Since it's been there for a while, you're probably a little bit wetter up there than we have been down here. Now we are very wet. So the type of water collection system that Ken described to you earlier would be a good way to start to collect this water so it doesn't wet the floor. You're basically going to intercept it where the wall and the floor meet so that you can restore the room down there. Now, one of the concerns that I have is you have a vapor barrier now over what are probably wooden studs and drywall. And the question is, what is the condition of the drywall, which may have been protected by the vapor barrier, but what's the condition of the studs? Do you have fungal growth going on in there? And you may wish to cut a hole in the wall and to see what is going on. Because if you've had some water coming through the wall itself, now a concrete wall will leak at the snap ties and it'll leak at cracks. And if that water has been running down, you may have some indoor air quality issues due to fungal growth. So a little bit of exploration work is probably needed here to be safe. Ken, anything to add to that?
No, I've seen basements that were built as you described, and we've opened them up, and the entire inside of the insulation was black. And so you really want to be careful. You want to take a close look at that. I'm with John 100% on that.
Yeah.
And if it's not great, it's a lot cheaper to patch a little hole in drywall than to deal with a house that's unsafe to live in and breathe in.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, Gary. Thank you for calling. Email from Larry. I'm replacing a roof on an 80-year-old barn, putting steel right over asphalt shingles. Do I need to put the lightning rods back on with a steel roof, or can I simply attach the ground cable to the steel roof? What do you think? John, you've got a barn. What do you think?
Well, yes, and I'm a big believer in lightning protection, especially after 2 days ago when we all were levitated off the floor. But I don't know the answer to that one, Larry. Generally, a steel roof should indeed be grounded, but lightning rods, I think, may still be valuable. I think this is a place where you may have to talk to an expert in lightning protection, like New England lightning protection. The idea of the lightning rods is to try to concentrate the heat and the power away from the structure. So I think you could have a grounded roof, but if you had a direct hit on the metal, the temperature from that perhaps could ignite the surfaces underneath. So my guess is, but it's only a guess at this point, that lightning rods probably make a lot of sense. But go online. New England Lightning Protection, if I'm remembering the name correctly, is one place you can check. And if they don't have the information, email me at frei@chorus.net. And whenever I get stumped, that means I've got to go out and do some free research for our listeners, doesn't it? So I'm a little stumped here. So I'm going to educate myself as well as you, Larry. So thanks for the question.
Thanks a lot for the question.
That's why you're so smart, John.
we'll post your email addresses up on our Facebook page. I think they're already there, but we'll do it. Richard and Cudahy. Hi.
Hi. My question has to do with ridge vents. Four or five weeks ago, we had a lot of rain, and the north side of the house where the ceiling and the wall meet, about a 15-foot section started leaking in that seam. With the rain we got now, nothing. But I have a leak 20 feet away that we've never had before.
20 feet away? I'm sorry, 20 feet away?
Well, let's say on the upper level.
I'll tell you what. Please describe your roof to us. What's it look like?
It's a cathedral ceiling, Swiss chalet-type ranch.
Okay. And how old is the building?
Oh, it's about 35, 40 years old.
Okay. And then you have ridge vents across the entire roof? Is that
yes,
right?
We're talked into ridge vents. We had a power vent. Then 15 years ago, when we had the roof replaced, he talked us into ridge vents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I look at the ridge vents on our house that were installed, and they seem to stop about 8 or 10 inches from the end of the roof.
Yeah, that's not unusual. Roofers will do that because that's over the overhang, and it doesn't do any good, so they usually stop them short. I don't like to do that because you could see the look. We just run them towards the end and then terminate them, and it looks a little nicer.
Yeah, because the neighbor across the way from us.
But it doesn't make any difference on the ventilation capability.
Okay.
Is it the type of ridge vent that you shingle right over the top?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you're saying that the leak was happening directly below where? Below the ridge or below the
in front of the soffits where the wall and the ceiling meet.
Okay.
And now we're going to have that fixed. We have a guy coming in. He's going to repair it.
And what's he going to repair?
Well, he says he's going to take out a foot of drywall.
Oh, so he's going to repair the damage inside. Yes. Okay.
Right. The question is, we're going to have the roof repaired or replaced this spring.
Oh, good.
Would you have the roof repaired before the inside?
I would. It sounds like you've got a roof leak that really should be. I'm sorry to laugh, but of course, you know, you want to fix the water damage before you fix the inside because you could just have it again.
Okay.
I don't know how steep was the pitch of your roof. Is it? Can you walk on it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not more than probably 6 and 12 or maybe 7 and 12, something like
right.
that. When your roofer does your new roof, you'll want to put some what's called ice and water shield along the eave end of it. And a lot of people run one course, which is 3 feet wide all the way around. I recommend two if you can afford it. It's not that much more money, and it gives you a little more insurance, rather.
How far does that go up?
They're 3 feet wide, so if you run two courses, that gives you just under 6 feet because there's
okay,
a slight overlap. And then the rest of it is felted up at, beyond that. Also, ventilation is another issue because you might have a really nice ridge vent, but what do you have on your soffits? And then also, what if you've got a cathedral ceiling, does air move from your soffits up over the insulation and out the ridge vents? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Larry, how old is your house?
33 years, I think you said.
Did you say 33?
Richard, is your house 33?
No, 33, 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a possibility that some of this is actually not a roof leak.
That's true, too.
Some of this could be frost that has now finally melted because you've got condensation along that wall. I think you really need to have somebody who knows what they're doing take a look at your house.
Well, how far down would you go? Would you have them lift any of the plywood to look at the underneath any place?
Well, what I would do is start with somebody who does energy work, which could be an energy designer. It could be an architect. It's possible that your house perhaps only has like R20 or so insulation and that the insulation may not be very good and you have a lot of thermal bridging. Mm-hmm. Because you're putting on a new roof, you have the opportunity to overlay your existing roof with Cornell panels. That's a brand name, but I always use it because it's like Kleenex.
And it's Wisconsin.
It's a Wisconsin-made panel. And what they are is they are insulation panels that you put over your roof, and then they have an airspace in them, and then you shingle over the top of it. But you can double or even triple the insulation in your cathedral ceiling, and it's really the only way that we've found to do cathedral ceilings. I would actually probably hire a local architect to come take a look at your house, do an energy analysis, and perhaps take a look at an improved ventilation and insulation system, because when the roof is off, that gives you a wonderful opportunity to really make a significant difference on this house.
And it'll never be as inexpensive again, even though it's not going to be cheap. It's never going to be this inexpensive.
That is correct, because you're going to be replacing this roof anyway. So what you would end up doing is filling up the rest of the cavity, putting this new panel over the top, and then you'll have to raise the fascia a little bit, and that's where it's nice to have an architect so your house still looks nice. And that will give you a roof that'll probably last the rest of your life. Plus, it's going to really reduce your heating costs. And go to Focus on Energy to see what may be available also for rebates for doing such work.
What did you call those panels?
Well, the local Wisconsin one is called a Cornell panel, and I believe that Mike Cornell does have a website.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my email is up on Larry's webpage, so feel free to. I know I've got Mike Cornell's email someplace here. It's a Wisconsin-made product, so you're not shipping it from the East Coast. Many companies make these energy panels because they are extremely useful, especially with houses that have cathedral ceilings.
And they go on top of the roof, underneath the shingles.
That's correct. Yep. So you'll see absolutely no change from inside the house whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Okay, we'll have to keep that in mind.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Facebook question from Kimberly wondering, what are the pros and cons regarding solar when building new? Starting all over again. Ken?
Well, let's see. First of all, you want to make sure that the solar panels are appropriately designed for the house. So that's one of the upsides is solar could really help lower your costs for creating energy, for heating water, for, like I say, helping reduce your electric bill. The issue, though, is that you want to make sure that it's tuned to the house properly, that your system is, I'm trying to find the words. For some reason, I'm having a hard time. I'll back up. It could be very expensive way to not achieve the results you'd like to achieve. They have to be south-facing. You have to make sure that they're properly, it's properly installed so that you don't have drainage on at night and in cold weather. You need storage systems. You need inverters. It's a great system. It just has to be done correctly.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good south-facing a bunch of trees there that are going to be blocking it. It's certainly worth a look. Yeah, there we go. Thank you for that question, Kimberly. Appreciate it very much. And we have lots of callers here on online who, what about refinishing a tub? Let's see here.
So you've got
Tony in Evansville. Have you got a quick question?
Yeah, actually two quick ones. We refinished our bathtub. It was a cast iron porcelain tub back in 1987.
Uh-huh.
And it was like new, but it has begun to wear off or come apart and peel and crack.
So you're wondering, should that be replaced? We'll ponder that. Stay with us. We're going to take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. But then we'll be back with our guests and with Tony from Evansville. So you stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Well, like a lot of things in life, it can be a little too easy not to pay attention to your home's upkeep until something goes wrong and then it needs to be fixed and you need to have some advice that you can rely on. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. My guests today are contractors John Freiberger and Ken Adams. And they're with us until 12:30. They have lots of great advice to share with you. And you can join in with your questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. You can go to my Facebook page. Maybe you want to post a photo there. Maybe you want to post your question there. And that's at the Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there, and we will send you daily updates on show topics and a whole lot more. We'll be back with our guests right after this look at the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. You might feel just fine tackling some home improvement projects on your own, but a lot of times a professional is needed, certainly needed in my case, in my home, because I'm not too good at that sort of thing. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. I turn to experts like John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg or Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison because they have some great advice and they're with me today to talk with you about your home issues. So you can join in with questions at 800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, post a question or a comment there. And guys, we before our break, Tony from Evansville was with us. He's had a tub that he refinished, was back in the 80s.
Yeah, I think you got your money's worth. Are you still on the phone there?
Yeah, Tony should still be there.
Okay.
You got your money's worth out of that one.
Yeah, it was a really nice job, and it has lasted quite a while. But about a year ago, maybe a little more than that, it's begun to chip and peel.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a unique tub. We only have two walls. It's not a square tub.
Oh, sure.
It's got curves.
Uh-huh.
So just to simply say replace it is what we'd like to avoid.
Sure. Well, you could try having it refinished again. There are some, I remember having a product on in a bathtub that was an epoxy base, and I think that tub lasted about 20 years, maybe 18 years before it started to chip. The surface is not the same resiliency as the original, so you're not going to get, a lifetime out of it, but you could try to have it done again. I don't know what has to be done to prepare a pre-finished, a previously refinished tub, so you're at the mercy of the experts that'll tell you what their product does.
I guess the one question I had was, the builder, we did a pretty extensive remodeling, and in fact, the tub wasn't in bad shape, but one of the carpenters, in toenailing in some studs, the hammer got out of his hand and hit the tub and took a big chunk out of it. So
That's terrible.
We had it refinished. There were some other defects to it, but I didn't know about that service. My general contractor did, and I haven't heard any. You hear about these inserts that set down over a tub, but I guess my question is, there are still people doing the, I think he sprayed it on. I know he closed up the bathroom and told us not to come in, and seemed like there was a glow coming from under the floor.
there wasn't any nuclear waste in there or anything. No,
something was going on, but.
It was probably either an epoxy or a polyester base resin that was sprayed on, and they're hazardous to spray, but once they cure, they should be safe. There's different materials out there, and everybody will tell you theirs is best, so you're gonna have to do some research. I'm sorry I can't be more helpful, especially when it comes to refinishing a previously refinished tub.
Well, the other question would be, is there sources for a replacement tub?
Well, there are. I know what kind of tub you're talking about. It's on two walls, and it's got not rounded, but maybe a little chamfered edge on the one finished edge the two finished sides.
The one you would normally have the third wall at the other end, but ours just curves around and mm-hmm. the long wall.
Yep.
Now I think Kohler makes one. And there's another manufacturer online. Where are you located?
Evansville.
Evansville. You know, Tony, why don't you shoot me an email, and I will do some research. Because last year I priced out a project for somebody, and they decided not to move ahead on it. But it involved the same tub, and I might have in my records where you can find a tub like this as a replacement.
What is your email?
My email is, you can send it to ken@adamsofmadison.com, adamsofmadison.com.
All right.
Okay, and I'll see what I can do for you.
All right, good luck, Tony. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Joan and Rudolph. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering what's better for house insulation, either open or closed cell, and does it make a difference if it's for a basement sill, an exterior wall, or the attic?
Well, these are good questions. When you say open cell and closed cell, are you thinking about a specific product that somebody's recommended?
Something that like the spray foam type stuff. Mm-hmm. It's
like Isonine. Did that name come up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then like two part polyurethane foam was another one that came up.
Right.
Okay. Well, there's pros and cons to both. The Isonine is considered a greener product. It's considered a healthier product. And it's an easy application. It's a little less expensive to install. Over the last several years, though, my understanding is that there's been several projects, a lot of evidence that it's been shrinking and cracking and pulling away from cavities. It also, because it's open cell, it allows moisture, or it can allow moisture to pass through, which in some cases can be a good thing. In a roof, probably not, or in a ceiling, probably not. But that are some of the downsides. A lot of the greener architects that I know are not recommending it anymore. Now, polyurethane, you're going to be hard-pressed to find more insulation per inch than a spray foam polyurethane. Some of the name brands are like Corbond, I think, is one, and more will come to me as we talk. But one of the downsides of this product is that it's a petroleum byproduct. It's very expensive to install, and it, too, has the possibility of shrinking and cracking and moving away from material that it's been sprayed onto. It happens less often, but it does happen. So installation issues for both of them are important. And in walls, other than basement walls, for both products, they require vapor barriers. They also require code requirements, or fire breaks. And so if you have it in an attic that you can store stuff in and walk around, and you need to put something over the top of it, like a fire stop drywall or material like that, before you can actually be safe. Is that helpful for you?
Well, then would you recommend not going with a spray product?
And where are you going to put this?
Well, I'm going to be doing the basement sill, looking at what's currently in the exterior wall. It was built in the 60s.
Sure. The sill place, probably would be a great place to put two-part polyurethane foam.
Okay.
It's exposed. You'll see it, so you can see if there's anything happening in that area over time. It's one of those places that we pretty much, that's usually the product that we use.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck, Joan. Thank you. We had a Facebook question from Paula. Do I need special paint for aluminum siding? It's never been painted in about 30 years.
Companies do make special paint for aluminum siding, and you have to make sure you read the directions as far as the preparation work so that it sticks. You have to get rid of a lot of the chalkiness and things, but the products have been well formulated, they've been well tested, and you can finally get rid of that harvest gold color that's been bugging you for years.
Yeah, I've seen great jobs, and I've seen horrible jobs of painting this stuff. So.
You know, we had, this is three houses ago, but we had an aluminum siding, and we had a professionals come in and paint it, and we drive by that house every so often. It's been 18 years at least. Still the same paint, and it still looks great. I'm really...
Like most paint, it's all in the prep. If you do the prep right, it's the rest of it.
They did a great job on the prep, and I couldn't have been happier, and I'm sure the people who bought the house from us are pretty happy, too.
Well, that brings up a good point, Larry. A lot of people go to buy a paint job, and they look at low cost as an important feature, and a lot of times... It's the cost is all in the prep work. And so most of the time when they see a cheaper job, it's usually because they're not going to put the prep work involved. So you really, it's one of those places, there's many in construction, that you get what you pay for.
Pat in Marshfield, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about what I call a solid gutter cover. I have a quote from somebody, product is called Absolute Gutter. Do you know anything about that?
Not that particular one. I don't, but
not by brand. I've seen many of the different ones, Gutter Helmet, etc., and they seem to work in some areas.
Larry, what is it that you used on your last house that was so fabulous?
I knew you were going to answer.
Sorry.
I can't. I'll think of it in about 20 minutes from
right
now.
Right after the show's over.
I can't think of it. It worked great.
This is why we have the Facebook page, right, Larry?
Yeah, I'll put it up on the Facebook page. It was not a complete cover. It was more of a...
Like a screening or something?
Yeah, screening.
Like gutter guard, maybe, or gutter...
It was like gutter guard, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it worked great. And the solid gutters, I have no idea.
I don't really know the products. There's so many out there, and many of them work and many of them don't, so I can't really speak to the particular one you're talking about. So good luck.
Yeah, sorry, Pat. We'll try and put something up. If Judith will remind me, what was the name of that gutter and thing that you've got? Actually, the one we have on our current house has been working great, too, and we don't have as many trees as we did at the other place, and so you'd expect almost anything should work well at our current home, but the other home had heavy trees on the one side, and the gutter guard worked really well. And I'll get something put it up. Jim in Horicon, hi, thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry, and your guest. Mm-hmm. I have a question about replacing the cedar siding on my house. Two summers ago, we replaced siding at the south end of the house, and this is a 40-year house, which we had felt under the original siding. And the contractor left the felt on and covered it with Tyvek, and then we put cedar. I had stained the cedar siding on both sides with acrylic stain, and he installed it directly over the Tyvek. And I think it was last month, you had a question about that. And I think it was John that said that cedar should not be installed directly over Tyvek because it would damage the Tyvek. So I need to do the west side of my house, and I have a question about correct way to install cedar siding.
Hmm.
Well, there's the most correct way, and then there's the adequate way. It's nice that the contractor left the felt on the house because the felt may be more reliable than the Tyvek. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that cedar should not be installed over Tyvek, but what we have found in some recent studies is that if the cedar and Tyvek get wet, especially if it's not back prime cedar, that the sugars from the wood go into the Tyvek and act as a surfactant, and then the Tyvek at that point is no longer waterproof.
Okay.
Now, you are back priming your cedar, which is great. So that really eliminates that problem. So I think that what you're looking at, the double layer of felt and Tyvek, is what we actually have been recommending for years. So I would continue to do that. However, if you can afford to go to a rain screen system, that is really that's the Mercedes way of doing it. What you could do, since you have a house from the 1940s, you probably have a wall system that is, at best, is R13, if you figure all the elements of it. Mm-hmm. Plus, you've got the thermal bridging, which probably brings it down to R10. So if you put an inch of foam over the exterior of that house, leave the felt on, put the foam on, put a layer of Tyvek, tape the foam so you have a double barrier, and then do a rain screen system, that cedar siding is probably going to last just about forever. Plus, you're going to really reduce the heat loss through that wall, and you're going to do a great job of taking care of installing a wind barrier, which you're getting anyway with the new Tyvek, as long as it's put on carefully. But you won't be punching as many holes in the Tyvek because you're on a rain screen system. Your siding is nailed to the strapping, not directly through the Tyvek.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the rain screen.
If you go to Forest Products Laboratory here in Madison, you should be able to download some information on rain screen. And again, my email is on Larry's Facebook page, so as long as you like Larry's Facebook page, then you're allowed to email me, and I can probably send you some drawings from one of our jobs that shows how a rain screen system is installed.
Cool.
It is going to add a little bit of cost. But with a 1940s house, you may be looking at some fairly significant reduction of your heat loss through the walls.
Okay, actually, our house was built in 1972.
Oh, 72, okay. 72,
but it does only have 3.5-inch fiberglass insulation.
And what does it have for exterior sheathing?
Plywood.
Plywood, okay, yes. So basically, your 1972 house, which was probably built under the 1971 code, was probably the same thermal efficiency as a house from the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
It's really after the 72 oil shock when we really started pushing things and we increased what was required in walls by about 50%.
Okay, so I will look that up. But you said as long as the siding is sealed on the back side, it won't damage the Tyvek then?
Yes, that is the current state of the knowledge.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I will look that up.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We had, follow up on the tub issue. Doug in Menasha emailed us and says if you get the tub to them, Kohler, if you go to Kohler with the tub, they'll take the tub, strip it down to cast iron, and re-enamel it with porcelain.
Will they do that?
They will if you take the tub to them.
Well, there you go. Tony, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was.
Yeah.
That is good information. I mean, I wonder what it's going to cost, but
well,
I don't know.
These tubs, there are almost none of them around, the kind of tub that he has. It's a very unusual tub.
So it's
tub.
Really a good a tub that yeah. you're going to want to keep anyway.
Yeah.
So,
wow, that's
well,
great
I
news.
Hope he's still listening. You can contact the Kohler people, take the tub to them, they'll strip it down and re-enamel. And Joe in Harper's Ferry, hello to you.
Yes, I have an attached garage that has an open ceiling. I want to put a ceiling up there to stop the drafts coming out of the attic over the 8-foot ceiling in the house. Drywall versus plywood. Does fire code require 5/8 rock up there? And should I have a vapor barrier?
What's above your garage?
Just the open ceiling, just
oh.
the roof.
I don't think there's a code issue up above the garage. It's the common wall with the house that you have the fire code issue.
Okay.
And so you could drywall it. You can certainly use fire stop drywall, or you could plywood it if you think you're going to be hanging things on the ceiling,
yeah,
like bicycles and stuff. That might be the ticket.
Yeah. Do I need a vapor barrier if I have plywood?
Well, let's go back to the fire separation first, because if the garage attic and the house attic are attached, then if you use drywall on the wall, that would have to go all the way to the underside of the roof.
Yes.
Okay, I see that, yep. Okay.
So that may make it much, that may suggest that what you want to do then is to go ahead and drywall the garage ceiling.
Right.
Now, one other note, you can actually get a B-labeled pull-down door to access the attic above the garage. They're special order at the lumber yards, but they do, the B-label pull-down door is indeed available. As far as a vapor barrier in a garage, if you're insulating the area above, I would go ahead and put it in. I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. Ken, what do you think about that?
Well, are you going to be heating the garage?
No.
I would say that as long as it's isolated from the house, I don't see that you'd need to do that. Does your drywall go all the way up through to the roof, or does it stop
No, it doesn't. Stops, okay. It just stops, and you know, you can look up and see back into the home. So mm-hmm. I need to seal that off one way or the other, correct?
Yeah, you could do that with the fire stop drywall.
There you go.
All you have to do is put up 5/8 or fire rated drywall, and then tape it. Mm-hmm. You know, tape in one coat of mud. Doesn't have to be fancy pants.
There you go. All right, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And a Facebook question from Popeye. I've looked unsuccessfully to find a timer such as 30 to 60 minutes to control a 240-volt baseboard heater. Any ideas? Unfortunately, we've forgotten to turn it off from time to time, which is pretty unsafe.
That's a very good question. I know that you can get thermostatic controls so that you could actually wire up on some units. You can disable the control on the unit and put a remote thermostat hardwired to it. That might work for you, because then you can turn it up to a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you can use a programmable one, you can have it adjust itself. So that might be the way to go.
All right. And let's see, we got time. Ooh, maybe. Allison, you got a quick question?
Hi, I have a question about the water entering in the basement. Similar problem to what you answered before with the crack near the floor and water entering there. Our house, though, has poured concrete walls, and we also have two sump pumps, which are going constantly right now, but we still have water coming in, and I'm wondering if you could explain in more detail that solution you suggested before, or if there's something else, should we seal the cracks?
Okay. Well, we got about 45 seconds.
Okay. The first thing to do is to have the drain tile checked by a local plumber or sewer cleaner who can see whether it's actually working and collecting all the water. If it is, that's great. The wall crack itself can probably be sealed with the pressure-injected epoxy if it's coming right through the crack, if that is the only place where it's leaking. So you're probably going to have to hire a plumber and then have a waterproofing or a water collection expert come in and evaluate the crack itself.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Allison, appreciate your call. And Ken and John, thank you so much. The time flew, and you'll come back again, I assume, and we'll do this again.
I would hope so. It was really wonderful.
Thanks a lot. And again, you can find links to both Ken's and John's businesses on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Tomorrow, oh my goodness, Friday already, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County, joins us to talk about all things gardening. Stay with us. Lots in store.